prizes, fun, trivia, special guests, and you. Yes, it's the return of Theater Geeks Live to the Bristol Opera House, featuring everyone's favorite theater trivia game show, I Know, I Know.
No, I don't I know. Anyway.
Join the geeks, John, Dave, and Marcia, along with Quizmaster Rick Ellis and MC Kevin Agelski, live at the Bristol Opera House, Saturday, November 9th at 10 a.m. $10 admission includes your breakfast, followed by a three-episode taping of Theater Geeks, including our game show, where you just might win one of several fabulous prizes, or at least something funky out of the Opera House basement.
Oh my God, my mind just went totally blank.
Mark the date, November 9th, for Theater Geeks Live at the Bristol Opera House, Bristol, Indiana. All proceeds benefit Elkhart Civic Theater. Call 574-848-4116 weekday afternoons for tickets, or check elkhartcivictheater.org for details. Theater Geeks Live, November 9th, 10 a.m. at the Bristol Opera House. Don't miss it.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.
So it's 4 years.
4 years, and they said it wouldn't last.
Who said it wouldn't last? Oh, John and I said it wouldn't last. We said it wouldn't last, didn't we, John?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
And now we're...
But just think, from the kitchen table or the dining room table at John's apartment, we have risen to the library of the Civic Theater.
There we go. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shelp.
I'm Marcia Fulmer. And
we are Theater Geeks.
Wait a minute. Yes, this is... This is a very special episode of Theater Geeks for two reasons. Number one, this is our 100th episode of Theater Geeks. Yeah, and we started this, and we were just actually proving it to ourselves a minute ago, because we started doing this 4 years ago in fall of 2009, and my dates are a little hazy there, but somewhere it's only because I'm old, and but yeah, we've been doing this for 4 years, and we have been, for the most part through all those years, have been bi-weekly, and we have recently switched to going weekly, but it's kind of amazing that it's kept on going. And I would just like to say, basically, thanks to both of my co-hosts here, John and Marcia, for sticking with it for this long.
And thanks to Dave for this
David,
idea.
Where else would we just come and sit to talk to you forever?
That's right.
And it's, and ever.
Yeah, we sort of have this new routine for the weekly podcast. Now we meet. We actually don't do the. It's here's a little known secret. Don't tell anybody. We record these in advance, and so. But we get together.
Ruin the whole thing.
That's right. It's a spoiler. The we get together at the little restaurant next door and have breakfast and talk about what we're going to talk about, and then come over here and talk about it. It's kind of the routine.
Why does that sound weird?
It sounds sort of unplanned.
Convoluted.
Actually, we
whatever.
Yes, that's true. The other good reason that this is going to be a great episode, we have with us Deirdre Lovejoy.
Ta-da.
Hello, welcome, Dee Dee, to Theater Geeks. There you go.
Okay.
She's providing her own crowd noises here.
Of course, crowd noise. Honorary geeking.
She's the honorary geek.
She's like our anniversary geek.
This anniversary geek. There we go.
I'm your geek Scott.
Your geek Scott. There you go.
And she just happened to be in town.
Happened to be in town because you're tearing away from here almost immediately to go to the Jersey Shore.
To the Jersey Shore.
Yep. By the sea.
You can't beat it, that's for sure.
Okay. Anyway, that's why Dee Dee's here. But you've had some wonderful adventures since the last time we talked. You were on our live show in a year ago. And it was just before you were heading into doing the show Lucky Guy with Tom Hanks and a whole lot of other folks. That was a... We got to see a lot of your posts and things online about how wonderful this cast was, mm-hmm. and you know how did that happen, and how did it roll, basically? I mean, when you got the part kind of by remote control, right?
I got the part from a tape I made on my iPad, mm-hmm. in my hotel room at the Candlewood Suites in beautiful downtown Indianapolis.
Whoa.
That's when she was doing the show at IRT.
Right.
And so I can't remember when our last live podcast or Skype cast was.
Yeah, when we were live here in the Opera House.
Was I in California?
Yes.
You were still in California. I think it was December of like 2012.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Lucky Guy was, as Mom talked about in her podcast where she talked about Lucky Guy
forever,
was an amazing experience. I knew it was going to be dreamy, and I knew it was going to be fun, and it exceeded all of my expectations. So I was certainly so far the highlight of my career, and
That's right.
Was a great show, and it was a sold out run, and it was a love fest, and we had a great time.
And according to the New York Times, you got to do some operatic swearing.
I did.
That was kind of an interesting little.
I don't know where she ever learned that.
Ah, okay. So it was probably in the script, huh?
Yeah. Of
But she's staring very intently at her mother.
Who taught her everything she knows?
So, give us an idea of what the process was. This was a story that was based about on a real person, and it was by Nora Ephron, and who apparently I assume knew him.
No, not at all.
Mike McAlary was the guy's name, right?
That's right. Mike McAlary was a columnist for the New York Post for many years and the Daily News.
Right.
And he became the highest paid columnist after Jimmy Breslin and had a run of stories in the 80s that were just ridiculously successful. And he finally won the Pulitzer Prize for his coverage of the Abner Louima story in New York, which was a Haitian dude that was raped by police, essentially.
Yeah, this says it was an actual story.
Neither here nor there. But Lucky Guy was inspired by Mike McAlary's obituary, actually. Nora Ephron never knew him, and she read his obituary and thought, wow, that would make a fascinating life, and clipped it out, and within 2 weeks she started writing what was going to be a screenplay, and eventually that turned into Lucky Guy the play.
So right.
It was.
Is it going to be a movie ever, do you think?
I imagine it will be now.
Okay.
I imagine it will be now.
And was now, and you played three different characters?
I played two different characters. I had three different costumes, three wigs and two characters.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
One of my characters was just a reporter that walks on and holds a microphone.
Okay, so it wasn't a big deal, though.
No. Yeah. But I played the female presence in the very male-dominated newsroom in the 80s, and I played the character in the second act that was Mike McAlary's editor and champion.
Right.
And at the Daily News.
Right. So you've done shows in New York before, but so how is this different in terms of the experience?
It was a hit.
Oh, well. Okay.
Mom, that's right. Well, in New York, I mean, I hadn't done a play in New York in a good eight years.
Right.
Because the plays that I've done have been out on the West Coast. But Mom's right. It was first of all, I mean, I've done successful plays before. I did How I Learned to Drive, and I was doing that when it won the Pulitzer, and that was exciting. But for the most part, other than, you know, a couple plays at the Public, my New York work has been, and other Broadway plays, and some of those even not good, have been in shows that were, you know, moderately successful, and not because they weren't good necessarily, but because they were just moderately successful, and we had, you know, a very sold out run on Broadway, and that was exciting.
Right.
1,200 faces staring at you every single night, no matter what, from our first preview, till our closing night. It was, you know, it was thrilling.
Well, then there was sort of like the big name celebrity aspect of it because of Hanks. There were a lot of, you got to meet a whole lot of other people as well who were fairly
crazy.
Large names. Yeah, so you got
that. It was crazy.
Yeah.
You had everybody from Hollywood and everyone from New York City. And it was a strange convergence because of Nora and because of Tom.
I had a blast reading all of your posts on Facebook and on your blog and just watching the pictures come across there every day, picture after picture.
Where is that blog, by the way?
Well, my blog is – I started this blog during the show, actually, to sort of kind of chronicle my – experience.
It's part of your main website, though, right?
And so, yeah, if you go to the the blog, thanks, Dave, is called the Lucky Girl Blog.
Right.
And it's on my website, which is DeirdreLovejoy.com.
Okay.
And you know, all you can hook up to everything Lovejoy on my website.
That's right. There you go.
Follow me on Twitter or on Facebook or in any manner of ways.
One of the things that I don't think any of us knew until we started reading your blog was that you're a great writer. So that was kind of fun to read your writings.
Oh, yeah.
So,
they're
always very engaging, you know, and that's hard to be an engaging writer.
So. Well, I appreciate that.
There was one that where you talked about, you know, you're rushing into the, it was all the crap you go through before you rush to get upstairs and going out in the cold and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the whole thing, but but it's just kind of, it's fun to get brought into that world a little bit for those of us who don't get to experience that. So
I appreciated doing it because actually when I look back, even though I got very sparse during the run, because doing 8 shows a week is much more taxing than I remember it being. Perhaps this is because I'm a little older.
No, you're not older.
But the blog turned out to be so well received. And I always had great pictures to push with it, you know.
Yeah,
there's me and my pal Oprah. You know,
your pal Mike Nichols.
The favorite one of mine was.
I know,
and it really showed. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. It shows what a goofball and fun guy Tom Hanks must be.
Oh, that
and
one.
It's you with Carol Burnett, and Hanks is behind you photobombing the picture.
That's
looking
right.
Looking like a total squirrel.
That's
and
right.
it's just like, God, that is so fun. And it's like, I just love that picture. It's like, yeah.
That says it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, and that's what you just, I mean.
Mom was at the show that night. Mom was at the show.
I sat right across the aisle from Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
And Mike Khalil, people may remember, was there, and he said, I think that's Carol Burnett over there. And I looked, and I went, don't be ridiculous. I'd know Carol Burnett if I saw her.
Right.
And so I just totally ignored everything the rest of the play. Then there she was, and I thought, oh, well, I must be slipping. But
that's
I didn't recognize her at all.
Yeah.
Mainly because she wasn't talking. She was just sitting really quietly.
Yeah.
And I thought, that can't be Carol Burnett.
We got pretty insatiable by the end because of the caliber of people that were coming.
Yeah.
And by the end, it was like, by closing week, there were a few mumbles of, can you believe the president didn't come?
Yeah, right.
President's chief of staff came. Many, you know, congressmen, speaker of the house, senators.
Wow.
And so we were a little bit stood up by President Obama, but that's okay.
Let me ask you, was it a hard show to do, or was it made a whole lot easier because of the cast, or was it, I mean, how, you know, just in terms of, you worked hard, I know, but then that's not really my point, but how was it on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of the work and getting it done?
Well, we started from scratch, so for me, it was a 10, surprisingly enough.
Yeah.
I really thought because I was, you know, I was playing two roles. And so if ever you're playing two roles, you think, well, this isn't going to be as difficult as playing, you know, the main female role, whatever that was. And I really underestimated my parts and B, the challenge, because I couldn't just reach into my regular bag of tricks. The director, George C. Wolfe, wouldn't have that. And so we were all pushed from the get-go, and we were trying to take this thing off the page and make it a clear story. And it's a very fast-moving story.
Oh,
there were 300 light cues in Act 1.
Oh. Wow.
And Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower won the Tony for our lighting design for our play, because it really was the set, and it really... It was basically a blank stage with desks moving around and projections, but the story was told with light. So 300 light cues in Act 1 is just sort of a way to illustrate that it was a really fast-moving, time-traveling piece, and we had to work hard, and we had such a great time that I've never been in a company where the director on the last day says, this is my last time that I'm going to be here for notes, and that everyone is like, oh my God, no, please, mm-hmm. no, don't go. And literally like just sitting in the house and not leaving. We came off stage after our last performance, and I've never experienced anything like it in my life. We were all weeping during the curtain call, and we took many curtain calls, and we all, the whole company exits stage right, and everyone just came off and just stopped in the wings, like wouldn't leave the wouldn't. And right. It's a small backstage, even though it's a huge Broadway house. It's, you know, it's 12 feet backstage, and we all just stood there in complete silence, and no one would leave. And we all knew we had to, and there were people lining outside the door. And so finally George came in with a tray of champagne, and we made a toast. Mm-hmm. And Nora's son was there, and husband, and it was and we all just stood there. Nobody wanted to leave.
Wow.
But we all knew it had to end, because you know, all good things must. But it was hard to we all wanted to hold on to that experience,
right.
because it was so charmed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not articulating it very well, but it was a joy.
As a professional, though, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, but it sounds that when you said they didn't let you use your regular bag of tricks, obviously you had to learn some new tricks.
Yes.
So, you know, it's one of those things I think that people don't necessarily think about with theater, is that I think that it's always a learning experience. Every show is a new learning experience. Maybe this one more than some others for you.
Well, sure.
But, you know, and in community theater, we always push that a great deal. But people don't just get up and do it here. And you don't just get up and just do it instantaneously, even in a professional production. It's work.
No. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I have the opportunity to practice what I do every day, which is a great gift. But you know, every actor has a wheelhouse, you know,
and when you are actually
forced to really go outside of your comfort zone in a professional situation, that's rare, because usually you get hired because they know your arsenal, and he knew my arsenal, and he knew that I could do what I did. And to the outside eye, I mean, my mom saw the show 5 times. She probably didn't notice anything. That she probably was like, "Oh, I don't know if you thought you had seen me done that particular thing before." But it was, for me, it really challenged me in my work. I had to push myself to a place where I had never been, and I didn't like or understand, and I didn't agree with, and it was very stressful.
Yeah.
Very stressful up until like the second week of previews, when I finally started, I was like, okay. And then I still didn't feel like I hit my stride until we'd been running 2 months. And really? Everybody at 2 months was like, oh, damn, I wish we could open now.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That was 2 months. That was after a month of previews and a month of performance and opening, you know, having been reviewed and all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And it couldn't have been a more satisfying experience, because no matter what happened every night, one of the most famous movie stars in the world, and it could have gone any way in terms of him being a jerk,
right.
or in terms of him just being sort of polite but standoffish,
right.
you know. And we got the fish rots from the head down, and so between Tom Hanks and George Wolfe, no one was allowed. If there were any asshole possibilities, I'll beat myself. If there were any possibilities,
yeah.
They were cut off at the knees, and it was everyone felt safe, and everyone felt encouraged. So we did get to get messy and be bad for, you know, even in front of people, which you just have to.
That's cool.
It was great. I feel like I've been rambling. So
that's fun.
Hey,
it's great.
We do. You have written a play now, right?
I have.
A one-woman show sort of thing. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I can, but I have to say that I hate one-person shows.
Oh.
So.
But we'll like this one, right?
Well, you know what? I actually, the only time I ever mention that is right now, and I'll never say it again because I don't mean to imply that people that come to see one person shows are in any way nothing but fabulous. But I'm not drawn to it as an artist,
mm-hmm.
or as an actor. I'm not drawn to. Lots of actors want to conquer that in their career. They want to have the experience of having to carry a show for an hour and a half by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I never thought I could do that. I'm sure I could do that, but I never wanted to. So having said that, the experience of having a piece that needed – a story that needed to be told, and the best vehicle for telling that story was a one-person show.
Mm-hmm.
And I've performed it for the first time at Chautauqua Theater Company last month.
Right.
And it was an incredible experience. I didn't know if the piece would be clear or if it was good storytelling. I didn't know if it was going to be of value. And it's called Bird, Elephant, China. And it's the story of an experience I had a couple years ago that involved my health. And, I had a series of debilitating seizures. By the end of that year, I was barely walking or talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very intense period. And when I did finally come out the other side, I felt very, very changed. And it's an issue that I try to – I just try to tell the story of. So – that is my one-person piece, Bird, Elephant, China.
And you're going to be possibly doing it more around the country?
Well,
you're looking at ways of doing that right now?
I can't imagine I won't be doing my friend Holland Taylor wrote this one-woman show called Anne that she was doing at Lincoln Center right when we were doing Lucky Guy. And I actually had lunch with her last week, and I was telling her about the piece and how it had gone and that I was – going to be taking it on the speaker circuit to do corporate engagements. I was submitting it to solo festivals all across the country and all around the world. I'm doing grant proposals because there's some further research that I'd like to do, and they're mm-hmm. Great. And she just looked at me and she said, "And you have just welcome to the rest of your life, because this piece will actually probably wind up becoming a bit of a signature of mine, just because it's my story, and I feel very, very invested in mm-hmm. taking care of it." And the reaction after the reading at Chautauqua was so positive, and people were engaged, and they were fascinated, and they were inspired, and all of those are terms that I was very surprised and thrilled to hear. So I'm going to try to do as much as I can.
So, and to keep track of this, go to DeirdreLovejoy.com or follow Dee Dee
on the Twitter machine.
On the Twitter machine.
At
Dee
Dee
Lovejoy.
Well, we got to do that again.
Dee Dee Lovejoy.
There you go.
We'll say it together. I didn't realize we were doing the Greek chorus here.
I chose not to get involved.
I like it.
Okay.
Me either.
All right. By the way,
I just talked a long. No.
Yeah. Well, that's okay.
You are
more than welcome anytime you are in town. Speaking of the Twitter machine, we are at theatergeeks.com, and you can follow us on the Facebook machine as well as at our website. also, by the way, this is our 100th episode.
Yay! Yay! We cannot give the 100th episode enough props.
That's right. That's okay. This is this 100th episode is hitting right around the 1st of October, which in the 1st of October means podcast award nomination time. That's
Yay!
What that means.
That's right,
yay.
That's right.
So what you need to do is go to podcastawards.com and vote, or you nominate, for starters, Theater Geeks in the cultural/arts category. It'll be pretty obvious when you get there. There'll be some stuff on the website as well at theatergeeks.com, so you can check that out to make sure you're doing it correctly, but it's really not hard. We'll do a little post about the ballot and what it looks like. You can vote for us in the cultural and arts category, only in the cultural and arts category, not in any other categories too, because they disqualify us when they do that.
Oh, we don't want that.
They don't disqualify us, but your vote doesn't count if you put put one podcast in more than one category. You can also put us in there like for People's Choice, and there's another one, but those
I'm
are kind of
confused.
The overall categories. But only cultural arts. You're getting confused. Yeah. Then go to the website at theatergeeks.com, and it will all be explained.
Okay.
That's the deal. Anyway, so we're hoping to win the big one this year in the cultural and arts category, and the podcast awards is really kind of a neat thing. Remember, also, you can listen to Theater Geeks at the website, theatergeeks.com. You can listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher, On Demand Radio. We're looking at getting into some other channels as well, which you'll hear about as time goes on. Let's see. You can also listen to us at the Blueberry Network. That's blueberry.com. We're there. We're also on your Roku box if you really want to find us
and
there.
And you can see us live.
And you can see us live
November 9th.
November 9th. We are going to be doing a live show here at the Bristol Opera House. Streaming is still kind of up in the air as to whether we'll do that or not, but it's quite possible that you'll actually be able to watch us live. But you can come here if you happen to be in the neighborhood. And
absolutely.
At the Bristol Opera House, November 9th, Saturday morning.
Fun and games.
And it's fun and games and food. And we'll probably do about 3 episodes of the podcast, and we'll have special fun and guests and prizes and our game show, I Know, I Know.
Yes.
I love I Know, I Know.
That's right.
We know you love
I Know, I Know.
I do.
Also, be sure to stop by our online store at theatergeeks.com/store, where you'll find those hats, cups, mugs, T-shirts, teddy bears, and Marsha's favorite.
Oh. No, I'm not saying it.
Well, okay. I was just surprised, just so everybody knows, there's actually multiple kinds of underwear on our web.
Multi-wear, multi-underwear.
I thought it was just a thong.
Give you a booty and boots.
Oh, please.
Yeah,
it's there you go.
No. Clock. You can get a clock.
A clock. That's true. And then after you get it, you can clean your clock.
Oh, okay. Forget that. That's bad.
All right. That's all from us. I'm Dave Dufour. I'm
John Shelp.
And I'm Marsha Fulmer. And we are
Theater Geeks.
Thanks to Dee Dee for being with us as well. So,
happy 100th podcast, Theater Geeks.
Thank you.
That's it.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's.com.